这个是那个人生的
Anyone remember anything from yesterday? I mean, not from yesterday in general. There's a lot of things about yesterday I'd like to forget, also. But just about what we spoke about Krishna, that I would like to remember. And? Yes? His goodness specifically, and those things are manifestations of goodness, tolerance, etc., forgiveness. These qualities are born out of goodness, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has recommended. Tolerance and having a forbearing nature, chinara pisa, he said, or tarota pisa, as qualities of Vaishnavas. It also means that Vaishnavas have to be in goodness and ultimately pure goodness, purest goodness. And then, we were just ending that part, and then something wonderful is going to happen. Yes, and what about, did we hear about Rasiva?
He was run away from benediction.
Yes. Was that yesterday? Your memory is so good. Well, was it? What do you think? Uh-oh. You have such a good memory. This is wonderful. Remember everything. Also, Narada Muni could also remember even past lives.
Wow.
You have such a good memory. I want, if you remember all your past lives, it might get confusing which one was the last one, or the one before, or the one before. So same thing when you remember what happened yesterday. Krishna's blessed you with a good memory. So, anyone remember anything else? That ended. So the conclusion was that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, because interesting enough how the Supreme Lord is defined as the one in the most goodness, and that was specifically what they were looking for. Who is the Supreme Lord? The one who's the most good. So Krishna is all good. So everything that he does is good. Even the things that we don't like, they turn out good by his mercy. He's saying that everything, no matter what it looks like, what happens to a non-devotee, whether it looks like a shubh or ashubh, means auspicious or inauspicious, is inauspicious. And for a devotee, whatever happens, whether it looks like it's shubh or ashubh, auspicious or inauspicious, is auspicious. Did you ever hear that? So on hearing how humble the Supreme Personality of God it is, it's quite amazing, because the way that the concept of God, either in India, the impersonal concept, he's not humble at all, because if he was humble, then he'd have qualities, and he'd have the quality of humility, and therefore he wouldn't be nirgun, qualityless. And in the Western conception, he's very heavy, he's angry, nevertheless he's jealous, but doesn't speak of him being humble ever. So this is such a wonderful conception of the Lord. We become fearful of such a great and powerful Lord who's all powerful, but when we understand his humility and his good qualities, then that is the Lord that we can actually love. So we read a purport, but we'll read the verse of that, and then we'll just continue these verses, and then we will go on to a most amazing story, I doubt, because the purports are so interesting, we'll read them all. So I kind of doubt we'll complete that today, but let's see. Amazed upon hearing Bhrigu's account, the sages were freed from all doubts and became convinced that Vishnu is the greatest Lord. From him come peace, fearlessness, the essential principles of religion, detachment with knowledge. There is a kind of detachment without knowledge. What would be an example of that? What's the difference between detachment with knowledge and detachment without knowledge?
Maybe the difference between ignorance and goodness.
Okay, but what would it mean in relationship to detachment?
Giving up something that could be used in Krishna's service.
Yeah. Because without knowledge, you think that I'm giving this up. But it's not knowledge of that it's Krishna's.
And if anyone offers me any money, my hand turns the other way.
Yeah. Even when we, I don't know if you remember this, Dr. Taylor, but in 1974, we went to Govinda Bhavan. Do you remember that? We're in Calcutta. We went to the place where Prabhupada grew up. And at that time, right now, the deities are in a temple in the Govinda, Radha Govinda, in a temple on the ground floor. Quite a nice little temple. But in those days, there was some construction or reconstruction or something, and he was in a room. Do you remember that?
I thought he was in a temple on the ground floor.
Maybe, but I don't remember it that way. Years now. But in any case, on the altar, there was a picture of Ramakrishna. And he was in that, you know, someone was offering him money or something, or drawing him, he was like that, or like this, hands down. And then we remember that Prabhupada had said, commented not on that particular picture in that place, he said that this picture of this man, someone's offering him money, and he's like pushing away, and then you can take a picture of me, someone is offering me money, and I'm saying more. Because all the money, everything should be used in Krishna's service. That was Prabhupada's concept. He was very much yukta vairagya, but yukta vairagya of utility is the principle. That was one of the points that Prabhupada made very strongly. Everything has the principle is use everything in Krishna's service, but to make that pure, it has to be. Purity is the principle. Otherwise, in the name of using everything in the Krishna service, we will use everything in my service. Or I will use everything in my service. So, detachment with knowledge means yukta vairagya. Nirbandha Krishna sambandha yukta vairagya. So, from Krishna comes this, the eightfold powers of mystic yoga and his glorification, which cleanses the mind of all impurities. He is known as the supreme destination for those who are peaceful and equipoised, the selfless wise saints who have given up all violence. His most dear form is that of pure goodness, and the brahmanas are his worshipable deities. Persons of keen intellect who have attained spiritual peace worship him without selfish motives. The Lord expands into three kinds of manifest beings, the Rakshasas, the demons, and the demigods, all of whom are created by the Lord's material energy and conditioned by her modes. So the Rakshasas are in the mode of ignorance, demons, passion, demigods, goodness. But amongst these three, it is the mode of goodness which is the means of attaining life's final success. What chapter of the Bhagavad Gita describes this?
Okay.
Huh? Okay. Yes, but a little more in 17, when the conclusion of chapter 17 is that we should practically take act in the mode of goodness, and then offer everything to Krishna. That's what's described in chapter 17. And also, even though devotees are transcendental to the mode of goodness, generally they act in the mode of goodness. It's just the general mode that we the devotee cultivates is goodness. In the Krishna books, Srila Prabhupada writes, there are different kinds of people existing in the modes of material nature. Those who are in the mode of ignorance are called rakshas. Those in the mode of passion are called asura, demons, and those in the mode of goodness are called suras, or demigods. Under the direction of the Supreme Lord, these three classes of men are created by material nature, but those who are in the mode of goodness have a greater chance to be elevated to the spiritual world back home, back to Godhead. Sukhdev Goswami said, the learned brahmanas living along the river Saraswati came to this conclusion in order to dispel the doubts of all people. Therefore, they rendered devotional service to the Supreme Lord's lotus feet, and as a result, they attained his abode. And Srila Sutta Goswami said, thus did this fragrant nectar flow from the lotus mouth of Sukhdev Goswami, the son of the sage Vyasadeva. This wonderful glorification of the Supreme Personality destroys all fears of material existence. A traveler who constantly drinks this nectar through his ear holes will forget the fatigue brought on by wandering along the paths of worldly life. So the traveler isn't one who is just traveling from place to place in this world, but in life we are traveling, really we are traveling from one destination to the other, continuously traveling from the age of one to the age of the final moment of birth. It's a journey. It's a journey. Life is a journey. And the end of the journey should be understood, because what is the use of going on a journey unless you know what the end is? And then if you don't know what the goal of the journey is, then there's no way of knowing whether it's better to go left or go right, or take a train or a plane or a bus or a trolley or walk. You have to know where the goal of the journey is. If someone says, it's so obvious, someone says, should I go by plane? And then they say, where are you going? To the park. You take plane and car with you and scooter, but you should not go by plane because it's too close. Let's walk or bicycle. Purport. This narration by Srila Sukadev Goswami is precious in two ways. For those suffering from spiritual infirmity, it is an effective tonic to cure the disease of illusion. And for surrendered Vaishnavas, it is delicious and an invigorating beverage, fragrant with the aroma of Sri Sukha's realizations. So those were Sukadeva Goswami's realizations. And Sutta glorified it, because Sutta heard it from Sukha. Now, here comes another story. This is a pastime. This is also a cute pastime. We have described the last one as the cutest pastime, but this one may be cuter than the cutest. Once in Dwarka, Sukadev Goswami said, a Brahmin's wife gave birth to a son, but the newborn infant died as soon as he touched the ground. O Bharat. Purport. In this chapter, Lord Vishnu has been glorified as the Supreme Godhead. Now Sukadev Goswami is going to identify Lord Krishna with that same personality of Godhead by describing another pastime of his, one which highlights his unequaled divine characteristics. So Vishnu is the Supreme and Krishna is the Supreme Vishnu, even though Vishnu has more arms, more hands. The Brahmin took the corpse of his child and he placed it at the door of King Ugrasena's court. Then agitated and lamenting miserably, he spoke the following. He's very angry. This duplicitous, greedy enemy of Brahmins, this unqualified ruler who is addicted to sense gratification, sense pleasure, has caused my son's death by some discrepancy in the execution of his duties. Presuming that he himself had done nothing to cause his son's death, the Brahmana thought it reasonable to blame King Ugrasena. In the Vedic social system, the monarch is considered responsible for everything occurring in his kingdom, good or bad. Even in democracy, a manager who takes charge of some group or project should accept personal responsibility for any failure, rather than, as is so common today, trying to place the blame on his subordinates or superiors. Citizens serving such a wicked king who takes pleasure in violence and cannot control his senses are doomed to suffer poverty and constant misery. The wise Brahmana suffered the same tragedy with his second and third child. Each time he left the body of his dead son at the king's door, and he sang the same song of lamentation. When the ninth child died, Arjuna, who was near Lord Kesava, happened to overhear the Brahmana lamenting. Thus Arjuna addressed the Brahmana. What is the matter, my dear Brahmana? Isn't there some lowly member of the royal order here who can at least stand before your house with a bow in his hand? These Kshatriyas are behaving as if they were Brahmanas, idly engaged in fire sacrifices. Sounds like a criticism of the Brahmins. The rulers of a kingdom in which Brahmins lament over lost wealth, wives, and children are merely impostors playing the role of kings just to earn their livelihood. So he's speaking very, very boldly because he's accepting that the Kshatriya's position, the ruler's position, is to protect each and every citizen and to accept responsibility for every good or bad action that occurs within his kingdom. My lord, I will protect the progeny of you and your wife, who are in such distress. And if I fail to keep this promise, I will enter into fire to atone for my sin. Purport. Chivalrous Arjuna could not tolerate the shame of being unable to fulfill his promise. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Sambhivatasya chakirtir maranad atirichite. For a respectable person, dishonor is worse than death. The Brahmana said, neither Shankarshan, Vasudev, Prajumna, who was the best of bowmen, nor the unequaled warrior Aniruddha could save my sons. And why do you naively attempt a feat that the almighty lords of the universe could not perform? We cannot take you seriously. Slap in the face. Sri Arjuna said, I am neither Shankarshan, Brahmana, nor Lord Krishna, nor even Krishna's son. Rather, I am Arjuna, the wielder of the Gandiva bow. Do not minimize my ability, which was good enough to satisfy Lord Shiva, O Brahmana. I will bring back your sons, dear master, even if I have to defeat death himself in battle. Thus convinced by Arjuna, O tormentor of enemies, the Brahmana went home, satisfied by having heard Arjuna's declaration of his prowess. When the wife of the elevated Brahmana was again about to give birth, the Brahmana went to Arjuna in great anxiety and begged him, please, please protect my child from death. After touching pure water, offering obeisances to Lord Maheshwar, and recollecting the mantras for his celestial weapons, Arjuna strung his bow, Gandiva. The Acharyas point out that since the Brahmana had disrespected Lord Krishna, Arjuna tactfully offered his obeisances instead to Lord Shiva, who had taught Arjuna how to use the mantras of the Pashupata weapon.
Arjuna fenced in the house where the birth was taking place by shooting arrows attached to various missiles. Thus the son of Pritha constructed a protective cage of arrows covering the house upward, downward, and sideways. The Brahmana's wife then gave birth, but after the newborn infant had been crying for a short time, he suddenly vanished into the sky in his self-same body. The Brahmana then derided Arjuna in front of Lord Krishna. "Just see how foolish I was to put my faith in the bragging of a eunuch, when neither Pradyumna, Aniruddha, Rama, or Keshav can save a person. Who else could possibly protect him? To hell with that liar, Arjuna. To hell with that braggart's bow. He is so foolish that he has deluded himself into thinking he can bring back a person whom destiny has taken away." While the wise Brahmana continued to heap insults upon him, Arjuna employed a mystic incantation to at once go to Samyayamani, the city of heaven where your Lord Yamaraj lives. And not seeing the Brahmin's child there, Arjuna went to the city of Agni, Nriti, Soma, Vayu, and Varun. With weapons at the ready, he searched throughout the domains of the universe, from the bottom of the subterranean regions to the roof of heaven. Finally, not having found the Brahmin's son anywhere, Arjuna decided to enter the sacrificial fire, having failed to keep his promise. But just as he was about to do so, Lord Krishna stopped him, and he spoke the following words. Purport. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments that Arjuna trusted Lord Shiva implicitly, completely, fully, as his guru, and so he did not bother to search out Lord Shiva's celestial abode. Lord Krishna said to Arjuna, "I will show you the Brahmin's sons, so please do not despise yourself like this." Despise or belittle, make yourself feel useless. "These same men who now criticize us will soon establish our spotless fame." Having thus advised Arjun, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, had Arjun join him on his divine chariot, and together they set off towards which direction? That's one guess.
Up.
Huh?
Up.
Up. Second guess?
Out.
Third guess?
East.
Fourth guess?
West.
Yes, oh, very good. You have guessed very nicely.
Thank you.
Yes, very good.
It's just a matter of
just a matter of evoking your mystic all-knowing potencies. The Lord's chariot passed over the seven islands of the middle universe, each with its oceans and seven principal mountains. Then it crossed the loka-loka boundary and entered into the vast region of darkness, total darkness. Purport. In Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Srila Prabhupada notes, Krishna passed over all these planets and reached the coverings of the universe. This covering is described in Srimad Bhagavatam as great darkness. This material world as a whole is described as dark. In the opening space there is sunlight, and therefore it is illuminated. But in the covering, because of the absence of sunlight, it is naturally dark. In that darkness, the chariot's horses, Saibya, Sugriva, Megapushpa, and Balahaka, they lost their way. And seeing them in this condition, or best of the Bharatas, because it was all dark, there was no illumination at all, Lord Krishna, the Supreme Master of all Masters of Yoga, sent his Sudarshan disc before the chariot. That disc shone like thousands of suns. Purport. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur gives the following insight into this verse. Lord Krishna's horses had descended from Vaikuntha to participate in his earthly pastimes. Since the Lord himself was pretending to be a finite human being, his steeds, his horses, now acted confused to enhance the drama of the situation for all who would one day hear this pastime. So of course, they didn't become confused, but just for the purpose of this pastime, they acted like they were confused, or well, they got confused, but for the pastime. The Lord Sudarshan disc penetrated the darkness with its blazing effulgence, and racing forward with the speed of the mind, it cut through the fearsome, dense oblivion expanded from primeval matter. As an arrow shot from Lord Rama's bow cuts through his enemy's armies. Following the Sudarshan disc, the chariot went beyond all darkness and reached the endless spiritual light of the all-pervasive Brahma Jyoti. As Arjuna beheld this glaring effulgence, his eyes hurt, and so he shut them. Purport. After breaking through each of the eight concentric shells of the universe, the Sudarshan disc led Lord Krishna's chariot into the limitless, self-effulgent atmosphere of the spiritual sky. This journey by Lord Krishna and Arjuna to Vaikuntha is also narrated in Sri Harivansh, where the Lord is quoted as telling his companions, "This divine expanse of Brahman effulgence you have seen is none other than myself, O best of the Bharatas. It is my own eternal effulgence. It comprises my eternal spiritual energy, both manifest and unmanifest. The foremost yoga experts of this world enter within it and become liberated. It is the supreme goal of the followers of Sankhya Oparta, as well as that of the yogis and ascetics. It is the supreme absolute truth manifesting the varieties of the entire created cosmos. You should understand this Brahma Jyoti, O Bharata, to be my concentrated personal effulgence." From that region, they entered a body of water resplendent with huge waves being churned by a mighty wind. Within that ocean, Arjuna saw an amazing palace more radiant than anything he had ever seen before. Its beauty was enhanced by thousands of ornamental pillars bedecked with brilliant gems. In that palace was the huge, awe-inspiring serpent whose name was Anantashesha. He shone brilliantly with the radiance emanating from the gems on his thousands of hoods and reflecting from twice as many fearsome eyes. He resembled white Mount Kailash, and his necks and tongues were dark blue. Quite a scene. Quite amazing. Arjuna then saw the omnipresent and omnipotent Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mahavishnu, sitting at ease on the serpent bed. His bluish complexion was the color of a dense rain cloud. He wore a beautiful yellow garment. His face looked charming. His bright eyes were most attractive, and he had eight long, handsome arms. His profuse locks of hair were bathed on all sides in the brilliance reflected from the clusters of precious jewels decorating his crown and earrings. He wore the Kastuba gem, the mark of Srivats, and a garland of forest flowers. And serving that topmost of all lords were his personal attendants, headed by Sunanda, Ananda, his chakra and other weapons in their personified forms, his consort potencies, Pushti, Sri, Kirti, and Aja, and all his various mystic powers. They were all surrounding him as servants. Purport. Srila Prabhupada mentions that the Lord has innumerable energies, and they were also standing there, personified. The most important amongst them were as follows: Pushti, the energy for nourishment; Sri, the energy of beauty; Kirti, the energy of reputation; and Aja, the energy of material creation. All these energies are invested in the administrators of the material world, namely Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Lord Vishnu, and the kings of the heavenly planets, Indra, Chandra, Varuna, and the sun god. In other words, all these demigods, being empowered by the Lord with certain energies, engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, 1, 2, 3. Now, what I'm going to do now I'm going to read from here to the end, the verses, and then we'll hear the purports. And the purports will reveal the deepest meaning. Lord Krishna offered obeisances to himself in this boundless form. And Arjuna, astonished at the sight of Lord Mahavishnu, bowed down as well. Then, as the two of them stood before him, Mahavishnu, with joined palms, the Almighty Mahavishnu, the Supreme Master of all the rulers of the universe, smiled and spoke to them in a full voice of solemn authority. He said, I brought the Brahmin sons here because I wanted to see the two of you. My expansions who have descended to see the two of you, my expansions who have descended to the earth to save the principles of religion. As soon as you finish killing the demons who burden the earth, quickly come back here to me. Although your desires are completely fulfilled, O best of exalted personalities, for the benefit of the people in general, you should continue to exemplify religious behavior as the sages Nara and Narayan. Thus instructed by the Supreme Lord of the topmost planet, Krishna Arjuna, assented by chanting Om, and then they bowed down to Almighty Lord Mahavishnu, and taking the Brahmin's sons with them, they returned with great delight to Dwarka by the same path along which they had come. There they presented the Brahmana with his sons, who were in the same infant bodies in which they had been lost. Having seen the domain of Lord Vishnu, Arjuna was totally amazed. He concluded that whatever extraordinary power a person exhibits can only be a manifestation of Sri Krishna's mercy. Lord Krishna exhibited many other similar heroic pastimes in this world. He apparently enjoyed the pleasures of ordinary human life, and he performed greatly potent fire sacrifices. The Lord, having demonstrated his supremacy, at suitable times, he showered down all desirable things upon the Brahmanas and his other subjects, just as Indra pours down his rain. Now that he had killed many wicked kings and engaged devotees such as Arjuna in killing others, the Lord could easily assure the execution of religious principles through the agency of such pious rulers as Yudhisthira. And the chapter ends. Now, when you read that chapter, what do you think of that ending? It sounds certainly like Lord Mahavishnu is the supreme, because he said clearly that Krishna is his expansion, and also Arjuna is expansion of his potencies, and after they finish their service, they should come back. Mm-hmm. Also, it's quite an amazing description of Mahavishnu singing in the palace. Quite awe-inspiring. Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur will reveal the hidden meaning. Do you want to hear? Have you heard it before? Now you will hear. Oh, what to do?
Next week.
Next. Tomorrow. Huh? Except that's 10 more minutes, but this should be read altogether. No, tomorrow we should read. One, two. It's really one purport. I'll read one of these. Lord Krishna offered homage to himself in this boundless form. And Arjuna, astonished at the sight of Lord Mahavishnu, bowed down as well. Then, as the two of them stood before him with joined palms, the almighty Mahavishnu, supreme master of all the rulers of the universe, smiled and spoke to them in a voice full of solemn authority. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur makes the following observation on this verse. Just as Lord Krishna offered obeisances to his own deity during the worship of Govardhan Hill, so now also he paid homage to his Vishnu expansion for the purpose of playing out his pastimes. The Lord is Ananta, possessed of countless manifestations, and this eight-armed form is amongst them. He is a Achyuta, never falling from his position, in the sense that he never stops engaging in his human-like pastimes as a cowherd boy in Vrindavan. Thus, to safeguard the special sanctity of his human-like pastimes as Krishna, he offered obeisances to his own planetary expansion. Lord Mahavishnu appeared before Krishna and Arjuna as Bhuma, the supreme opulent one, supremely opulent one, and as Parameshtinam Prabhu, the lord of multitudes of Brahmas, who rule over millions of universes. With solemn authority, he spoke in such a way as to bewilder Arjuna in obedience to Sri Krishna's intention. His smile hinted at his private thoughts, which Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has revealed for our benefit. My dear Krishna, by your desire, I will describe my superiority, even though I am your expansion. At the same time, however, I will subtly imply in my statements the supreme position of your beauty, character, and power, and the fact that you are the source from which I emanate. Just see how clever I am, that in front of Arjuna I am confidentially divulging my true identity as none different from you. So what's going to happen is the same statements that we heard, Vishnu Chakravarti, where Lord Mahavishnu is saying that he's the supreme, and Arjuna is thinking he's the supreme, but Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur will show how they're subtly explaining that Mahavishnu, Lord Mahavishnu, powerful and omnipotent as he is actually an expansion of the Supreme. We'll read another one. Lord Mahavishnu said, I brought the Brahmin sons here because I wanted to see the two of you. My expansions, two of you, excuse me, I brought the Brahmana's sons here because I wanted to see the two of you, my expansions, who have descended to the earth to save the principles of religion. As soon as you finish killing the demons who burden the earth, quickly come back here to me. So he's explaining the reason. I brought you here so I could see you. You who are my expansions and who have gone to earth to save the principles of religion, and as soon as you finish killing all the demons, come back to me. Purport. As explained by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the secret import of these words spoken for Arjuna's edification is as follows. You too, who have descended along with your colors, your personal energies, should kindly return to me after killing the demons who burn the earth. Please quickly send these demons here to me for the sake of their liberation. As stated in the Sri Hari Vansh and in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, that the path of gradual liberation passes through the intermediate stages of Lord Mahavishnu's abode outside the eighth shell of the universe. Although all your desires are completely fulfilled, O best of exalted personalities, for the benefit of the people in general, we should continue to exemplify religious behavior as the sages Nara and Narayan. Thus instructed, so he's giving them instructions. Thus instructed by the Supreme Personality, the Supreme Lord on the topmost planet, Krishna and Arjuna, agreed by chanting Om, and then they bowed down to Almighty Lord Mahavishnu, and taking the Brahmin sons with them, they returned with great delight to Dwarka by the same path along which they had come. There they presented the Brahmana with his sons, who were in the same infant bodies in which they had been lost. Having seen the domain of Lord Vishnu, Arjuna was totally amazed. He concluded that whatever extraordinary power a person exhibits can only be a manifestation of Sri Krishna's mercy. So here is the purport of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes Arjuna's amazement. He thought, just see, even though I'm a mere mortal, just a man, by Krishna's mercy I've seen the Supreme Godhead, the root cause of everything. Then after a moment, he thought again, but why did Lord Vishnu say that he took away the Brahmin's children out of a desire to see Krishna? What would the Supreme Personality of Godhead, why would the Supreme Personality of Godhead hanker to see his own expansion? Because everything that exists in the expansion exists, must exist in the entity from whom the expansion came from. So what would be so desirable in Krishna if he's the expansion of Mahavishnu, that Mahavishnu who would be possessing everything that Lord Krishna has, why would he want to see him? So Arjuna thought like that. Why would the Supreme Personality of God had hankered to see his own expansion? This might be the effect of some particular temporary circumstance. He was just something just happened or something. But since he said didriksuna instead of didriksata, difference in the Sanskrit meanings, where the specific suffix suna carries the sense of a permanent characteristic. In other words, it's not that just at this moment I wanted to see you, but it's a permanent characteristic that I, Mahavishnu, want to see you. It is not a temporary one. So therefore, it has to be concluded that he has always been wanting to see Krishna and myself. Even granted that this is so he wanted to see us, why couldn't he simply see Krishna Dwarka? He said, I've brought you here because I desired to see you. So now he's explained that this desiring, in his own words, meant that it is a permanent desire that I have to see you. And Arjuna is thinking, well, that means that Krishna couldn't be as an expansive. And it was a permanent desire. That's the second point. And then the third point is, if he wanted to see Krishna, why couldn't he simply see Krishna Dwarka? After all, Lord Mahavishnu is the all-pervading creator of the universe, which he holds like an amalaka fruit in his hand. Is it that he could not see Krishna Dwarka because Krishna does not allow anyone to see him without his special sanction? So he had to somehow make an arrangement that Krishna comes because he himself didn't have the power to go see Krishna in Dwarka. And why also would Lord Mahavishnu, the compassionate master of all Brahmanas, have repeatedly tormented an elevated Brahmana year after year? He must have acted in this unusual way only because he could not give up his extreme eagerness to see Krishna, and he had no other way to do it. Otherwise, he wouldn't act in such a way to torture and give so much trouble to one who he respects and loves so much as a Brahmana, unless it was a last resort, unless there was no other way that he could to get what he wanted. So how extreme his eagerness must have been, and there was no other way that he could have done it. All right, he may have acted improperly, and for that reason, he could not give up his extreme eagerness to see Krishna. All right, he may have acted improperly for that reason, causing the Brahmana trouble, but why couldn't he have just sent a servant to kidnap the Brahmin's sons? Because he knew that Krishna would come if he had kidnapped the Brahmin's sons. So why did he have to do it himself? Why couldn't he just send a servant to do it if he was so eager and he was even so willing to give trouble to the Brahmin? But why couldn't he just send someone to do it? Why did he have to do it himself? Why did he himself have to come to Dwarka? was stealing them out of Lord Krishna's capital so difficult that no one but Vishnu himself could hope to accomplish it? I can understand that he intended to cause so much distress to a brahmana of Lord Krishna's city that Krishna would be unable to tolerate it, and then he would grant Lord Vishnu his audience. So he's saying a servant of his couldn't have done it. He had to do it himself. Then, only then, he would grant Lord Vishnu his audience, because he wouldn't be able to tolerate the pain given to the Brahmin. So Lord Vishnu inspired the distressed Brahmana to pour out his complaint to Krishna in person. Thus it is clear that Sri Krishna's status of Godhead is superior to Lord Mahavishnu's. Having thought in this way, Arjuna was totally amazed. As it says that he was amazed, but externally it appears that his amazement is because he's seen Mahavishnu. But we have seen earlier in the 40th chapter of the 10th canto, when a Krura comes out of the water by the water of the Yamuna, after seeing Lord Gavadaksai Vishnu and Lord Balaram as Ananta Shesha, he comes out of the water and he sees Krishna and Balaram on the chariot, and Krishna looks at his face because he's come out of the water and he knows they're the same, and then he sees that Krishna and Balaram are still on the chariot. He looks amazed, and Krishna asks him very cutely. He says, "Have you seen something wonderful? You look so amazed. Have you seen something wonderful in the water?" Because he's seen Lord Gavadaksai Vishnu in the water, and him lying on Balaram and Antasesha. So Akura thinks of what he just saw, and then he thinks that he's looking at Krishna now, and he says, "Now that I'm seeing you, the most wonderful thing, there's nothing that I have seen anywhere, including the water, that is more wonderful than seeing you," because he knows that Krishna, that Supreme Person, who has just ridden on the chariot, who is happy to ride on his new chariot, like a boy, like a village boy, is the origin of everything and everyone, even Lord Vishnu. So therefore Arjuna, understanding the penetrating with his spiritual intelligence into the words of Mahavishnu, he's amazed because Krishna is the Supreme, his friend, and he's his friend. So therefore he was amazed, and he asked Krishna whether these were actually the facts of the matter. And Lord Krishna replied, as stated in the Harivamsa, "Madarshanartam tevala ritastena mahatmana vipratan eshate krishna matsamipam nasanyata." It was to see me that he, the Supreme Soul, stole the children. He believed only on a Brahmin's behalf will Krishna come to see me, not otherwise. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur states that Lord Krishna further told Arjuna, "I did not go there, however, for the Brahmin's sake. I went there, my friend, just to save your life. If it had been for the Brahmin's sake that I traveled to Vaikuntha, I would have done so after his first child was abducted." According to Srila Sridhar Swami, although this pastime occurred before the Battle of Kurukshetra, it is recounted here at the end of the 10th canto under the general heading of the supremacy of Lord Krishna's glories. So that is the wonderful explanation of the Srinath Chakravarti Thakur to that pastime. So we just heard maybe yesterday or maybe the day before how Krishna saved Lord Shiva, and now we heard how Krishna is the supreme even to Mahavishnu and all the Vishnus. So Lord Vishnu was proved to be the most tolerant and the supreme of all the Vishnus, because that was Chiradaksha Vishnu. So Gavadaksha Vishnu expands into Chiradaksha Vishnu, and this Mahavishnu, who is the supreme Vishnu, was the one that Krishna and Arjuna just saw, and Krishna is the supreme
even of Mahavishnu. And what else do we see? First of all, if he's the supreme, he's the supreme, he's the supreme, the topmost of the supremes, then it is not easy to see him. And even Lord Mahavishnu desires to see him. So therefore, if we have to undergo a little austerity and difficulty to see him, it's not something that should be expected. Huh? It's not something that shouldn't be expected. And then second point that comes up is how what Krishna says to Arjuna, it's not spoken about. I didn't go to bring back the Brahmin sons, because if that was the case, I would have gone after the first one had died. So there was a different purpose. I went for you.
For him as...
Because because Arjuna had said, I'm going to kill myself if I can't protect.
But he wouldn't go there if... he said that just after the nine.
Yeah. So that's what... But Arjuna wasn't involved before that. So he didn't go. So it wasn't just that, but Arjuna is so dear to him, so Krishna's devotees are so dear to him, that he's willing to do amazing things just to please his devotees and protect his devotees. So that's another point. That's wonderful, how dear the devotees are to Krishna.
Is it possible that everything was arranged by Krishna, also that Arjuna will know that Krishna is the supreme law?
But he already knows. Actually, he already knows. Because he's already showed him the universe.
When they seen Lord Mahavishnu was confused.
Yeah. But then he thought and he worked it out. But that's also Krishna's potency. But also because of the recounting of the pastimes, it's us who know. By the mercy of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. And he already has his relationship with Krishna. But we need encouragement and strength, so that we can continue and develop our relationship with this. Because it's not an easy path. Because it's something wonderful. If we expect something wonderful, wonderful, wonderful to be done just with no difficulty, then everyone would only be doing wonderful things. And that's all there would be, is wonderful things. And then our wonderful thing would be just common. But wonderful things take wonderful deeds in Krishna's mercy. Any other questions?
Interesting that the Brahmana was so adamant that it was the king's fault.
That was Vishnu inspiring him. That's what Vishnu said, that just so he would criticize.
But it was also part of the culture.
Yes.
But you can say it was also a part of the culture to understand that I must have done something in the past.
And also, there's a culture, but you don't blaspheme the Supreme Lord. He was more pure than that, so he was free from... Because there was an expression of him being wise Brahmana. Remember that? It said he was a wise Brahmana, so it didn't appear that he was acting so wise, actually. He was blaspheming everyone. Krishna, his devotees, everyone, Ugrasena, all Arjuna. So that was
very
inspiration,
severely.
But still, huh?
Very severely.
Very severely.
Not taking any responsibility.
Attached. It didn't sound like he was wise, but because he was being used by Vishnu. He's clearly wise anyway.
Also, before Kali Yuga, like in all the three yugas, the son does not die before the father. So, that, and because all his sons were dying, that is why he must be cursing the king.
He must have done something wrong.
Because if the ruler is not pious, if he is not Rajarshi, like Parikshit Maharaj, then this would happen.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's what his criticism was. The way that things should be done properly, they're not happening, so it's the ruler's fault. So. Mm-hmm.
It could be also things that he did in his past life, the Brahman.
But he knows he must have. Anyway, first of all, he's inspired to do it by Mahavishnu. Speak like that. And second, that wasn't his conclusion somehow. Okay.
And
stuff. Yeah.
And why did Mahavishnu instruct like Krishna and Arjuna to come back after that and become Narendra?
Because no, that's what they were. That's said in other places too, that they are Narayana and Rishi. Exactly the connection, I'm not sure. That's said in other places too.
Would that have to do with the fact that the connections expand from Rishi?
Or that Narayana and Rishi's forms enter into them or something.
I don't know the
connection exactly. That's also said in other places. Did you finish that door?
Yeah.
Tonight's part.
Tonight's part, yes. More colors.
Well, where would the more colors come from?
Over the gallery.
They're down there?
Yes.
Interesting pastime. Okay.